Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Sober Indian Saturday Night Live. Kind of running late this evening, but we had some tech issues earlier. We have Wenda C. coming on again tonight to talk. And with that being said, hi, Wenda. How are you doing this evening?
Great. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. So we were doing some serious talking the last time, and you told us some of your story. So I wanted to pick up where we left off the last time and continue with your story and your journey to where you are today.
Okay. Just a question. Is this going to be half an hour or not? Half an hour?
We have an hour. We have an hour. But if you finish before then, in the show, before the hour is up, if need be.
Okay. I just wanted to know how much time I had.
All right.
As Patrick says, we're all long-winded.
Oh, no, don't worry about it. I enjoyed listening to you talk the last time. So by all due means, I mean, I'm more than willing, and I'm sure our audience is more than willing and anxious to listen to you talk again.
All right. Okay. I think the last time where I left off was when I went for my when I went to a Sundance, and I was gonna share my experience with that. It happened on my mom's reserve, Tutnawisa being, and I was I think it was a Saturday, and I was dancing in my nest, and I don't know how it happened or anything. This is how it went. I went up, and I could see everybody in the circle of the Sundance. I could see the drum, and I could see the singers around it and drumming. Then I seen the lodge keeper standing there, and I seen the men dancers on one side and the women dancers on one side, and I could see them plain as day. And then I was thinking, wow, I could see everybody. And then I went higher up, and when I went past this plane, that's the best way I could describe it, but I went past it, just like when I passed this certain point, and my experience was I felt nothing. I felt like, what I mean is, I felt like everybody or anybody that was mean to me, that abused me physically, mentally, anything that they did bad to me, it did not matter. It didn't matter. That's how I felt. And I couldn't believe how I felt. Like those things don't matter. You know, that's what I felt. Twice I felt like that when I went to a Sundance. And the second time, I couldn't believe I was experiencing it again, you know. And I'm not sure my body, my spirit must have came out of my body, and I was looking down, and it took me higher. So I try and remember that part. You know, when people say something abusive to me, you know, or say they're going to harm me, you know, I just look at them and I don't even shake my head. I just think about that time, because I think I was shown that part, because when we go to the spirit world, when we pass away, all those things don't matter. They don't matter. because you go into the sacred realm, the sacredness, you know, where nothing hurts you, and all the things that you went through your your physical life in your body, those things don't mean anything. All those hurts that people do to you, or you do to yourself, self-injury to me is taking drugs and, you know, drinking yourself into a blackout. Mm-hmm. Or self-injuries too. And those things don't matter, you know. What matters is how you live your life, how you love people, you know. And my teacher recently passed away, my auntie, and the one thing I do to my friends and my family when I talk to them on the phone or when I see them last, or, you know, when I'm leaving their presence, I say, I love you. That's what I say. Mm-hmm. Those are my last words to them. And then they say, I love you too. You know, I'm so happy I say those words to people that I love, to my family and my friends.
Mm-hmm.
I feel overwhelmed that it's gone. I still didn't cry because it was a funeral of spirituality. She didn't want no flowers. She just wanted to pass away at home, and that's where they had the wake, and then they took her to the grave. There was no flowers there. The only thing that was there was the burning embers of the fire and sweetgrass. You could see sweetgrass had burnt. It was still in its braid. That's how it burnt. But I went there after everyone is gone, and because of COVID, you know, that's one of the reasons why I didn't want to go to the funeral or to the burial. I believe in taking care of myself because I work with children, and I, you know, I don't want to be the one to be infecting them, you know, unintentionally, of course. So that's, and I believe I had said that I took therapy for two times, and the first time was after I had quit drinking. It was, I think it was two years later, and, you know, that was the best thing I ever did for myself, and, you know, I'm so grateful to my ex that he suggested it. You know, I never ever thought, you know, I'd feel so, I freed myself of those thoughts, those negative thoughts I had in my head and in my heart, you know, and the hatred I felt for my parents, you know, and blaming them, you know, and, you know, it's of no fault of their own that they were the way they are, you know, and my, that when I quit drinking that year, I was in that Native School of Writing, and I did write a poem, and it took me 2 weeks to write it, as it took me back there. And this is before I even took therapy. And little did I know that was part of my therapy already for myself. I'll read it, and then I'll tell you what the outcome was.
Okay.
I'm trying to bring it up right now.
Thanks.
But that was my piece, and it was written. It's Okay.
Did you continue to write poems after that?
No, but I'd love to. That's another thing that I want to do is write some experiences that I had, and I've been taking photography since I was 12 years old. So, you know, sometimes I take these pictures. Sometimes I don't show them on Facebook because I want to use them. Then I don't
right.
want anybody to take them.
Mm-hmm.
So this is what I wrote. It's called The Journey of a Native Child. As a Native child growing up too fast and hard, sleeping with three other siblings on a double bed made up pillows of old coats, sometimes a single bed or doubling up on a bunk bed, waking up on a pissy bed. A Native child being a babysitter so that parents can go on a drunk, whether you liked it or not. A house cleaner, expect everything to be cleaned up or suffer ridicule in front of guests and mind your opinions or you get slapped on your so-called big mouth. Learn of a person at an early age. A Native child learns to cook quickly. Better cook buds before mommy and daddy get home. Is a door opener late at night whenever they want to come home and sleep from a drunk. Or you have to be their little audience for them, worrying what to feed your younger siblings when the parents are not there day to day. A Native child sees and hears the gossip that daddy is living with another woman. It's okay for mommy to do the same, play the cheating game. Alcohol makes everything fun. Wife beatings is a part of our way of life. Husband and wife should stay together because of the kids. A Native child is taught there's nothing wrong with more abuse. When mommy takes off, daddy waking you up in the middle of the night. Where did your mother go? Repeatedly with a rifle pointed at their innocent heads, screaming, I don't know, fearing their lives. A Native child grows, gets shoved here and there. A visit to your favorite grandma turns out to be a permanent one. Only place you can be a child. Play as a child if you knew how. You don't have to do any chores or look after your younger siblings 24/7 hours a day. A Native child, disease with tuberculosis, sent off to a sanatorium at an early age of 8. Coming home, nothing has changed, except you find your younger siblings have grown too. No mommy, no daddy falls on deaf ears. Feeling of rejection sets in. Why didn't you come and visit? No explanation. A Native child gets shoved into another visit again. This time to the unfeeling grandmother's home. The Catholic priest comes once in a while. We all have to go with the aunties to church. The priest hands out cans of Click for the hungry. I ask for one so that we can eat. meat instead of spuds and bannocks, only to be taken away by the vultures. Jeez. A Native child still waiting for the acting single parents to come and get you at your grandmother's home on long days. Being treated differently. Blamed for your cousin's whining cries. Being scolded constantly. Called a little bitch or a little bastard because your mother is from a different reserve. A Native child in a white foster home, thinking things will be better there. Huh. food and shelter has been paid, yet they put you to do dirty chores. Their children are suddenly on vacation, too good for the chores because brownies are here, being blamed for crippling a baby chick. A native child is remembered, the other siblings, who was taken away by Children's Aid, Ward of Social Services, because the foster parents had no use for a two-year-old, wondering if she's better off where she was, or what is going to become of us. I could have helped look after my younger sister, can't I? A native child shoved from school to school, different towns face new faces each year. Are we staying long this time? Sure, learning a lot of time wasting, ends up at a Catholic boarding school. Your only little brother, you can't talk or look at him. Forbidden to speak Soto, or you'll get slapped. A native child is sent home for Christmas from the Catholic school, only to be sent back with no explanation. We know mommy is in a hospital, but why? Did daddy hurt mommy again when they were drinking? The boarding school is closed, so we have to stay in an old couple's place while they play cards as my brother lays sick unnoticed. A native child moves to the city to get away from the reservation, only to find out we are poorer there. Accessibility to alcohol is easier for parents. Have to go on a supplementary budget on welfare because your father can support 7 persons with his check. Oppression is already part of us, no matter where we go. A native child is an adolescent growing up in the city, trying to find comfort and love by running away from home, only to find trouble in order to survive the streets, landing in juvenile courts, detention, and foster homes, being a teenage drunk, trying to forget about your upbringing, finding out there's no better there than here, abusively. A native child is grown person cannot find stability with the relationships they establish. Common law is easier to get in and out of. Can cut out of responsibilities the native children anytime. Alcohol has been embedded in you. Only sane way to have fun. Also take the beating. It's our native way. Only right. Nobody wants a good-for-nothing, lazy, alcoholic Indian anyway. As a native child becomes an understanding adult through education, is a way out of oppression, has a strong willpower to say no to alcohol, stays away from negative ways of abusive upbringing, has learned to do unto others as you would have do unto you. Unattached from any negative verbal, mental, and physical abuse, with a healthy mind to live peacefully and to teach others wisely. And that's it.
Wow.
That's 3 pages.
I don't know what. 3 pages. Wow. That was a lot of emotion with that.
Yes.
Crying. And I don't know how to respond other than that it was beautifully wrote, and I could feel the emotions from that.
Yes, it was really hard to write, and I suffered. Well, I didn't suffer, but I suppose I did in a way. But I'm happy I wrote it.
Mm-hmm.
When it was in print, and my mom got a print, and mm-hmm. she phoned me, and she called me names, every name you could think of, she called me, and I didn't say anything back to her. And then I just hung up on her. And she phoned me back. It rang 25 times. I would not answer the phone. Because I know she was very angry. And she felt like her life was put out there. That's how she felt. You know, it wasn't, she didn't acknowledge my feelings as a child at all. So she didn't talk to me for 2 years. 2 years she didn't call me. I didn't bother calling her, and it was my ex, the one that suggested therapy. He's the one that wanted me to call her and invite her to my graduation. I graduated from business course, and I said she won't come. She won't come, and I disliked him pushing me to it, and the reason why I didn't like him pushing me to it, it was after I've taken the counseling the first year, and I didn't like him pushing me to it because I was thinking, no, I don't even want her to be there. It would be nice, but I know already she's going to make up an excuse not to come because she still doesn't like what I wrote. So I said, I'll ask her for you. And I did ask her, and she said no. Even though my ex said he would pay for her way and everything, she still said no. So that was fine. And of course, my feelings got hurt because the expectation, there was a little bit of expectation for me to, that she would come, you know, and she didn't, you know. Then I felt hurt about that she didn't come, and, you know, she still wasn't acknowledging me, and that was, I had to deal with that, and, you know, I told that to my ex, you know, I sort of expected her to come, but she doesn't, and now, I said, no, I feel hurt. I said, and not extremely hurt, but now I have to let that go too. You know, I can't carry it. It was her that didn't want to come. And that's one of the things I learned when I was taking therapy is the expectation of what do you expect from someone, you know, you cannot get love out of somebody if you're expecting it from somebody and they don't, you know, they don't share that same love that you you have for them. You know, I learned not to set myself up for hurt like that. Mm-hmm. You know, that's one of the biggest things. But at the same time, I was taught to love myself, because if you love yourself, then you can help people. You know, you can share that you love yourself and you value yourself. That's who that matters to, is yourself and how you give yourself to other people. You know, when you share, there's times when people are so down and, you know, when I work with them or stranger on a street, or, you know, they question, they're all of a sudden walking beside me and they say, you know, I'm having problems with this matter right now. And then they tell me, and I said, well, go with your heart, do what's right for you. You know, you can't expect somebody to give you the answer. You know, you yourself, you know what to And there's other people that are, when they're down, and I could see that they're down, and I'll just go and say, hi, how are you today? And then I'll tell them a funny story and bring them out of whatever they're feeling. And then they say, thanks, you know, I'm just feeling down about this and that. And, you know, I just listen. I don't give anybody advice. I don't, that's throughout my life, I've always heard people coming to me, and even when I was drinking, you know, they'd come and tell me about their, what's going on with them, and I'll just listen. And when I took the counseling course, that's what I learned, that you can't give advice, you can listen. You can ask them questions to make them think about it, and you know, make up their own mind of the outcome of what they want. I can't do that. Nobody. And the same thing with someone crying. For example, if I see someone crying for their loved one, you know, you can't go and you gotta let them cry. You gotta let them release it. You can't go and coddle them and say, oh, this, you know, now they're not suffering, you know, like, that's not the appropriate thing to say, just to let them cry and talk to them, you know, if they want to talk. Sometimes they don't want to talk. Excuse me. It's just that they want to release. And their body is releasing all those tears. It's that moment that they have to release. Anybody that's hurt, you have to let them release it and not coddle them. Because if you're stopping, if you go and stop them, if you go and stop them, you know that you're stopping them from releasing those tears. I have to grab my water. Excuse me. And the second time I went to counseling was, I think it was about 6 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I needed to go again because I felt that the first time was, had to relate to my alcoholism and the abuse. But I just had to let out the second time I went, I just had to release all the hurt, you know, because I still kept it, even though I was living under the first, not conditions, but the first tools that I learned when I went to counseling. So the second time I went, I did the consultation. The second time I went for the counseling, my visit was 2 hours, and those 2 hours I cried. You know, I just had to release everything and cried about everything. I had to release it, and it brought me back to that day that that I was going to commit suicide, you know, that was still in there too, all those things. Mm-hmm. And I just had to release them and cry about it and tell that how much pain that it hurt me. And there was no alcohol in me to cry about it this time and to really release it. And so I left, and this was in the city of Winnipeg, and I had to cross Portage Avenue. It's a busy street. There was it was rush hour also. And I went across it, and then I went to my vehicle, and I was standing at my door of the vehicle, and I said, oh my goodness, I just feel so, I don't know how to explain it. It was like I felt light, but I also felt lightheaded, like I was kind of dizzy.
Mm-hmm.
So I got in my vehicle, opened the window, and then it was in the summertime. And then I took a big drink of water, and I sat there for a couple of minutes, and I was, oh, I'll be okay. And then I was driving. And then I was driving, I still felt the same way, and I said, oh, I just got to get home, you know, and maybe the drive will make this go away. But I got home, it was about 45 minutes later, and I still felt the same way when I got home, and I just felt so exhausted. And then 15 minutes later, after I got home, the therapist called me, and she said, I just want to know how you're feeling, she said. And I said, oh, I said, I really felt lightheaded and kind of sick to my stomach, I said, and all the way home, I said, and I'm glad I'm home, I said. And she said, yeah, that's why I was phoning you, because I was wondering if you're going to feel like that, and but just take it easy, she said, because that was a lot that you released. And I didn't know that your body would go like that after releasing so much garbage, you know.
Right.
So, you know, I recommend, that's the only time I'm going to recommend this for a person to get therapy, you know, counseling. It'll be the best thing that they ever did for themselves, you know, because you find out who you are and why you do the things you do and why you say the things you say. And that's what I recommend. And it took me 2 times. And now I feel at peace with myself. And, you know, I live alone. I'm happy that I'm alone, you know. And anything that I go through that's hard, like the death of my family, especially my sister last year. You know, I've lost other people too. My father. But this last one is my sister, second last. You know, that really, she's the middle child of the 7 of us. And that really hurt, you know. And she died of fentanyl. Carfentanil, that's what she died of. And she died on her bed, face down, and her partner was outside on the sidewalk. That's where he died. They both died together. And that's pretty tragic to go through. And, you know, if I was a drinking person, I had just freshly quit drinking, I probably would have drank. You know, that's just a poor excuse to go and drink, because my sister passed away. And this way, I went through the emotions, and it still hurts. But those are, you know, those are emotions you have to feel. You can't drug them away or drink them away. They're still going to be there, and a person has to deal with it. And that is part of life.
Very true.
You know, we all, every one of us on earth, you know, we will experience death in our lives at one point or another. And that's no reason to drink or do drugs. it isn't, or any kind of hardships that we go through, breakups, divorces, you know, those kinds of hurts, or, you know, someone cheating on you or abusing you mentally, physically, and mentally. Did I say mentally? But anyway, they can't, a person like myself, I do not allow something to happen to me like that. I don't allow it. You know, that's my boundary. And that's one of my standards. You know, I'm just a regular person. I'm just a regular Anishinaabe Kwe, you know, trying to follow our cultural ways and beliefs. You know, I'm not way up there above anybody. I'm the same as everybody, man or woman or child or elders, you know. That's who I am. I'm not anything special.
Well, I think, too, with everything that we've talked about or that you've talked about, it also shows your strength, too. And I personally think that you're a very strong person to have dealt with everything that you have and to rise above that. And I think that's great. I know this subject in particular is a very hard subject, and I'm still learning, and I know a lot of people out there that's listening is also learning. And I just think you're a strong person, and I appreciate you. I definitely appreciate you sharing all this with us.
Yes. I was going to say, too, that, you know, when we're experiencing all these things, you know, and then even myself, when I try to commit suicide, you know, and I was in a drunken stupor when I was thinking that. And, you know, there's most likely other people that are also thinking of this when they're on drugs, or, you know, that's not your true feelings. You know, I'm so happy and grateful for this man that came and knocked on the door, and to this day I still didn't thank him. And that's one of my things that I'm going to be doing as soon as we can all travel, you know. I want to take him a blanket and tell him I've been sober since that day, you know, and have a dinner with him or something, you know. That's a thank you. I believe in food celebrations.
Oh, food's great.
Yes, you know, and there's so many things to be thankful for. And, my mother, when I did see her face to face after I wrote this poem, she told me in my face, you know, I'm sorry I didn't get to nurture you the way a mother's supposed to nurture a child. That's what she said to me. You know, I feel, and that was her apology to me, you know, and I felt so great. And to this day, well, she has dementia now, but she comes in and out. And a couple of years ago, before it started being, she started not remembering people or anything, I said to her, "Mom, we came a long ways, didn't we?" She said, "Yes, we did," she said. And she started telling me about her and my dad, how poor they were. And, you know, they didn't, it was about underwear, you know, She said, yeah, your dad had to go and hunt, and he didn't have any underwear. All he went out is his pants and shirt and these white coveralls, what they used to wear for hunting at night. That's what he wore in the wintertime. And she said he went out, and that's how he went out. And he bought a jumper back, she said, that night, she said. But he was a good provider when we lived on a reserve. And that's what he did. And then I said, yes. And I remember living in a granary. You know, my dad made one window in there. And there was six of us that lived in a granary. Me and my sister and my brother and my sister that passed away. Four of us children with my mom and dad. And, you know, and those were just... And I remember that wasn't even, at that time, there wasn't any drinking, you know, because there weren't always drinking every weekend, you know, at that time. And I remember going to school, I was 6 years old, and, you know, they didn't make it a point to get drunk every weekend or whenever they had money. It wasn't like that. But it was, when we lived in a city, it was like that. But that's what we were sharing. And she said, yeah, we did come from a long ways to right now in our time. You know, that's before anybody had vehicles. And my dad was the first one to own his own vehicle here on my reserve, you know. Anybody else that had a vehicle, it was from their farmers that they worked with. But he was the first one to have his own vehicle. You know, so there's special times that I'd like to write about also. You know, it wasn't all ugly. And when I was 6 years old, I have to go and set snares in the morning before I went to school with my mom. Then I'd come home and I'd be tired. She'd, let's go and check your snares, she'd say in the fall. So I'd be stomping on the ground real hard on the leaves, and she didn't even turn around and tell me to quit it or anything. She just kept on walking, let me have my little tantrum and stomping on the leaves. And then she said, there, look at, we have a rabbit, she says. She said, tell me to take it off. And then we'd go and check a couple of more. You know, and she didn't say anything to me. You know, that's a memory that I cherish. You know, that she didn't give me heck for doing that. And she knew that I was tired from, I just walked a mile from school. And I was only 6 years old. You know, there's happy times too.
Yeah.
And that's the only things that I could think of right now that I could share.
Yeah. Well, what brings you happiness now? Now that everything that you've dealt with a lot of that trauma and stuff now, but what brings you happiness now?
Cooking a meal for my family. That's the biggest thing that I love doing that, like on holidays. But I won't be doing that. I haven't been doing that since March now. The last one was last Christmas. So I haven't been doing that now. And, you know, that kind of hurts, you know, because they love my food, what I make for them. You know, and my brother lives here on the reserve, and he has two sons, and one of his sons has two babies now. So the oldest baby, he was last year when he came over for Christmas, he was so happy that oh, you get to eat cuckoo's turkey, you know. No, so I was so proud because the baby is experiencing her first turkey dinner with me, made from me, you know. And my brother was smiling, telling that to his little granddaughter, you know. But that's the happiest time right now. And my everyday happiness is when I come home and I have two little dogs that are happy to see me when I come home, you know. They're my little world. Then my cat comes around. She gets off the chair and comes and meets me too and gives me a meow when I say hi, Tiny. You know. And I love working with the children. That's what I love doing. That's I work on my reserve now, and this is a second year. And I'm so happy I got to work with them because the last year I was asked to if I would like to work with the grade 6 girls. And I said, sure. And I had goosebumps because it was counseling. It was group counseling. Mm-hmm. And they were coming around when we're sitting in a group and they're getting more relaxed and telling me, you know, what was bothering them, you know. And that to me is an accomplishment, you know, just for them to trust in me and trust in the other girls that are sitting there, you know. It's not going to go anywhere, it's just between us, you know.
Right.
Yeah. I hope to do that with them again.
Yeah, and hopefully with everything, when all this settles down with COVID, you know, hopefully you'll be able to do that. Because I know that's been tough for a lot of people.
Yeah, of course it bothers them. It's, you know, I really feel for them because they're, all the children, their worlds are put upside down because children like routine. They do, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That gives them comfort, you know, because, oh, yeah, okay, we're going to be doing this and we're going to be doing that, you know. They like routine. Nobody can tell me that no child likes routine, because when they have routine, that means, you know, they're in a caring situation.
Mm-hmm.
Even if they have routine at home, you know, that gives them comfort too. You know, they go to bed by 8 or whatever time, but not 11 o'clock.
Right. They try, though.
Yes. Well, some of them do, yeah. The odd one. So, you know, at school, when they come to school and they're tired, and when we start off the year, I notice them, they're not cooperative, you know, or they're being mean to somebody. And I just ask them, did you have enough sleep last night? And they say no. And I said, oh, okay, that explains why you're being mean, you know. That's what I'll say.
Mm-hmm.
And then they, you know, make them think about it.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they're leaving for the end of the day, I said, okay, make sure you get enough sleep. Go to bed early, you know.
Right.
Encouraging them to try and look after themselves, to go to bed early.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to take care of themselves.
True. What would be a funny moment we're working with children? What would be the one thing that stood out as like super funny, that just happened, that you wasn't expecting?
Let me think here. There is funny moments, you know, that you don't expect them to say whatever. Mm-hmm. Like I believe in drinking water because I believe in I love water and water is life, you know, and all mm-hmm. that. And I was working with this boy the last year, and as he was thinking about something, so I took a drink of my water in my bottle, and I was just guzzling it, and I kept drinking it. It just tastes so good that at that moment I was guzzling it, and I put it down. And then he says to me, "Don't drown."
Oh my gosh.
Just started laughing.
Oh, that's funny.
But, yeah. So him and I, we had a little repertoire, you know, like that, you know. It was like a grandson and grandma moment, you know. We have those moments. Yeah. Yes. I help the teacher to, you know, make it fun, you know, make the some things fun for them to learn. So they're learning that they'll catch on instead of staring at you blankly and not getting it, you know.
Right.
Why don't you just make a game out of it, especially math, right? Some kids don't want to get it, or they just don't want to learn it. So if you make a game out of it, then they're going to learn. They'll get into it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what, you know, we'd have little teams, and because kids are always competitive. If you put them on teams, all of a sudden their competitiveness comes out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So have fun with them.
Mm-hmm.
And we have Ojibwe. We have an Ojibwe teacher, and she tells me to ask them in our language, Anenzewebok Agujin. That's, you know, how's the weather out there today? And then there's Aboa. That means it's warm out, you know, things like that. I have to daily to teach them. It's written there, and they have to find out which one it is, and then they have to say it. You know, just to brush up on, to try and make them talk our language also and appreciate it. So I try and be positive, even with their parents. You know, if I happen to see their parents or something, I'll tell them.
Mm-hmm.
Story on their children.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Well, how many minutes?
We have 5 minutes before the end of the show.
Okay.
Is there anything that you would want to put out there that you think that might help somebody with the web links? Of course, we know that there's, you know, the group page for Silver Indians as well. Is there anything else that you might want to put out there so that people would be aware of?
Just, you know, to be kind to one another, you know, there's no need, there's no place for unkindness, you know, everybody's here for, you know, and just to be kind to each other and acknowledge people, acknowledge the children, especially, you know, that's one of the things that we have to do right now is acknowledge the children because they're having a hard time. You know, they're children. How are they gonna? How is a child gonna know that they're going through a bad time, or they don't know how to express themselves? You know, and I think as we have to put ourselves in their shoes and be at that age, okay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just like alcoholism and in being in drugs. Nobody knows how to get themselves out of it and know why they're doing these things. You know, they have to try and help themselves and get that help to speak to somebody and get them out of it.
Yeah.
You know, you can do it. Anybody can do it. If I can do it, anybody can do it. Anybody, man or woman. You know, be kind to yourselves and love yourself, value yourself, those things. Acknowledge what you go through. Acknowledge those feelings. And if they're negative, talk about it and get rid of them and throw them out through the universe where nobody is going to bump into them or take it. Or that's what I say when something hurts me, you know, other than bereavement. You know, take this and Creator, take it and throw it away. Like if I'm sick, Creator, take the sickness away and throw it somewhere in the universe where nobody will touch it or nobody will get hurt by it. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Love yourselves enough to live the life that the Creator gave you. You know, He didn't give us drugs and alcohol. He gave us this beautiful life to live, to feel all these things from our hearts and have a mindful mind to do what's right for yourself and whoever's around you. And then, yeah, I'm starting to pray now for the whole world, for this COVID to leave us. And, you know, that's, if everyone prays soon as they get up, soon as they wake up, to pray that this COVID goes away. And, you know, to stay safe and be home. Don't go out there just for a coffee. You can have coffee at home, you know.
Mhm. Yeah, it's very simple to have coffee at home. Don't have to go out for it.
Yes, go out only for essentials, you know.
Mhm.
If you have flour and yeast or baking powder, you can make your own bread, your own bannock. There's lots of recipes out there that you can. You don't have to go running out for a loaf of bread, you know. That's sure, it's essential, but you know.
Right. Well, we are coming to the end of the show, and I wanted to thank you for coming on. I love to talk to you. I really do. I enjoy talking to you. And I appreciate the fact that you come on to speak about addiction and recovery and things that happen in your life. Because I know that's difficult to talk about. But I really appreciate you sharing with everyone tonight.
Well, Gichimi Gwesh, for having me and for allowing me to finish what I had to say. And I really appreciate it. Karen.
Oh, you're very welcome. I'll have to have you come back on again because I love listening to you talk. And you can feel the passion. There's a passion there for what you do and how you do it and how you feel about people and the things that you love. And it's very heartfelt. And
yes.
I really do appreciate you coming on.
Well, thank you again.
You're welcome. You have a great night, and I want to tell everybody else to have a great evening and thank them for coming and listening to the show tonight.
Thank you.
You're welcome.